from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. On Thursday, the Trump administration will hold its only California public comment hearing on the proposal to vastly expand offshore oil drilling. U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke says the plan is needed to cement the nation's energy independence. Environmentalists plan to protest the drilling plan at today's hearing, arguing that it is a threat to the state's coastlines and will harm wildlife. And state officials said on Wednesday that they will block transportation of petroleum from any new rigs. We're going to discuss the proposal and California's reaction. We have Steve Jones with us. He's spokesperson for the Center for Biological Diversity. And Steve Jones, welcome to Forum. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate that.
Appreciate your being here. And let me just have you confirm. We're talking about, in this plan that's been drafted, at this point, probably the largest expansion of offshore oil and gas drilling in U.S. history. About 90% of offshore areas where drilling can potentially be allowed.
Yeah, it's every U.S. ocean. This is a far more drastic and extreme plan than even the pessimists were expecting out of the Trump administration. They put everything into this thing.
And here in California, we're talking about, and in the Pacific, we got a couple of these in the north, a couple in the south, in the central, and Washington and Oregon. And there is, I might say, a massive effort among largely Democratic politicians, because these are largely Democratic blue areas, to oppose this. At this point, I'm interested in finding out how this relates to allowing lease sales program to go through, too, because that's going to encourage offshore drilling.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so what we're talking about here is the 5-year offshore leasing plan that Trump is putting in place to replace the one that Barack Obama had done. This one is going to cause about 10 times as many oil spills. It's a threat to the Pacific, the Arctic, the Atlantic. It threatens coastal communities and wildlife all over the country, and it's going to exacerbate climate change impacts as well.
Well, you talk about the Arctic. I mean, they're calling it a carbon bomb. As far as the bay here, there's a lot of concern about tankers, I know, in the bay. But there's a real threat to the California coast, to sea level rise, yeah, to ocean acidification. You got, what about releasing maybe, by estimates, 50 billion tons of carbon?
Yeah, that was our calculation. I think is about 50 billion tons of carbon dioxide equivalent is going to be put into the atmosphere and the oceans. So offshore drilling in California directly threatens us with oil spills, impacts to wildlife, but this whole plan, with as much oil as it's going to try to tap in treacherous regions like the Arctic, it's going to set off a carbon bomb that is going to exacerbate sea level rise on our shores, ocean acidification, and just a whole range of things. And it's also, these are decades-long leases that are going to slow our transition to clean energy sources that we know we need and the rest of the world is beginning to pursue.
And you've also estimated that we can expect, and I wonder how you come by this figure, about 5,000 oil spills in federal waters, about 10 times the previous Obama plan?
Yeah. Yeah, we had our ocean scientists basically take all the oil spill data that we know from the mid-70s to now, because we know that spilling is part of drilling. It is an inherent part of offshore drilling, is you're going to have lots of oil spills. So we estimated there's going to be about over 5,000 oil spills, including about almost 700 off California's coast in the Pacific, spilling about 4 million gallons of oil onto our beaches and wildlife.
So we're talking to Steve Jones, and he's spokesperson for the Center for Biological Diversity. But, you know, the argument is, and we hear this from Ryan Zinke as well as others in the Trump administration, this is going to make us energy independent. We're not going to rely on foreign sources anymore.
Yeah, the energy dominant is their new phrase they've been throwing around since last June. But the reality is we are already a leading oil producer in the world. We have decades worth of oil and gas reserves already under lease, enough to get us through the point where we need to have our transition to clean energy if we're going to prevent climate chaos and keep global temperature increases to reasonable levels agreed to in the Paris Climate Accords.
So environmental groups are fighting this, but you've also got some legal ways of combating this. I mean, there's no drilling in national marine sanctuaries, right? There's oil mm-hmm. and gas drilling banned in state waters. There are a lot of ways you can go here legally.
Yeah, but But the executive branch has a lot of power to begin challenging that stuff. And we and a bunch of other groups are going to be pushing back with lawsuits. I think we're hearing great rumblings out of state government, you know, with the State Lands Commission announcing yesterday that, you know, they're going to block any transmission of this oil from these leases through state lands, greatly complicating the ability to do this. There's strong unified opposition in California against this. Almost 70% of the people oppose this, and traditionally this has been a strong bipartisan support issue. Unfortunately, we're seeing the GOP congressional delegation from California. Only a couple of them have come out strongly against this. We would like to see more come out strongly against this, join Republican governors of Florida. Even the governor of Alaska has said this is too extreme a plan. There's too much being put under lease.
In fact, Senator Feinstein has put forward a resolution that all 58 California counties should be in opposition, and there's a lot of action going on from Lieutenant Governor Newsom, from Senator Kamala Harris, from the, I suppose you could say, the usual political sources in the Democratic Party. Let me get Bob Poole on here. He's a spokesperson with the Western States Petroleum Association. Bob Poole, good to have you. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you. You know, there's a lot of people very concerned about this. They keep bringing up oil spills, particularly Santa Barbara. Many of us remember thousands of birds and fish and sea mammals in that disaster, which was about 3 million gallons of black crude. These are bound to happen in many people's minds. Are we really going to benefit more by this with that kind of danger?
Well, you know, I think that the big concern that comes across for us is that California currently is using almost 2 million barrels of oil a day. The governor has even underscored this point when he has related the fact that we import over 1 million barrels every day, each and every day, over the ocean from countries, a lot of whom don't like us very much. And all of that oil is coming in tankers every day. So when you're looking at the significant challenges we face to power our economy going forward, I think it's important, and we want to stay focused in some objective realities here. You know, the folks that basically say we can switch over to other alternatives tomorrow, that's just not true. The Energy Information Administration, the federal government, projects that through 2040, we're going to still be using fossil fuels for over 80% of our energy. So rather than, you know, be a proponent of one or the other, it's important that we understand as we discuss these critical issues that we base them in the realities we face. We have a significant challenge forward. And when you're saying no to producing, I know your former previous speaker talked about existing things under lease, onshore, et cetera. Well, that'd be great. But, you know, what's going on in California is they're trying to stop all of that as well. And, you know, California has CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. So I think it comes down at the end of the day to the basic premise that if we're going to need oil for the foreseeable future, and we are, California using almost 2 million barrels a day, and we have resources in our country, onshore California, wherever, then doesn't it make sense to produce that oil rather than try to stop that and produce it under the most stringent environmental regulations on the planet, instead of importing this oil in super tankers from countries like Saudi Arabia and others, where they don't have those rules?
All right, let me do this. Excuse me, Bob. I want to give listeners an opportunity. I know they want to join in here, and there are a number of ways you can join this program. First of all, let me give you the toll-free number. You can join us right now by calling in at 866-733-6786. That toll-free number is available to you, and we do want to hear your thoughts on this and any questions or comments you might have. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum, and we'll take your calls and emails. But I want to go back to Bob Poole, because there are concerns, even with what you're saying, with tankers coming in here, and the tankers get a lot of people exercise just by themselves, but not only about the carbon and what I mentioned earlier. I mean, we've got a climate change serious planetary problem, to put it mildly, but we also have a striking concern about oil spills. When you look back at what happened in the Gulf of Mexico in 2010 and the Deepwater Horizon spill, it's very frightening to many people, and they would rather have stronger environmental curbs, which you call maybe too harsh environmental curbs, particularly with all the fracking that's going on, and alternative energy, than depend on oil or fossil fuels.
Well, I would like to correct something you say. I don't in any way, or our association, our members, share the opinion that we have too harsh of regulations. We function and produce America's energy within the constructs of the regulations. And as new ones come out, we try to find ways to additionally do that.
Well, forgive me. I used that phrase because you had said something about rather than adhering to regulations that are much too strict or words to that effect. I'm paraphrasing what you said.
Well, actually, a clarification is I think it seems to me the best opportunity for us is to produce our own energy where we do it under the most stringent environmental regulations under the planet. They don't have CEQA in Saudi Arabia. They don't have these regulations elsewhere on top of thousands of miles of importing. We've got a conveyor belt effectively going on right now from the Middle East to California. It takes about 30 days for a supertanker to get here. And if you're importing over 1 million barrels a day, then you've got these tankers lined up one day apart coming in here. All I'm suggesting is that when people are saying no to one thing, you're saying yes to something else. And given the broader dynamic of the challenges, then we really need to look at this in that context is what I'm saying.
Okay, and I wonder what you say to one of our listeners, Ed, who posts this on our website. He says, this is a truly criminal act against the environment. Besides the disastrous effect on California with more toxic chemicals polluting our shores, sea, and groundwater, the net effect also will add carbon dioxide and other destructive gases to our atmosphere.
What do I say to Ed?
Yeah.
I say we're all in this together. We all drive. We all use petroleum products. So let's work as we are doing. Our industry is working very diligently to develop alternative sources of fuel. We're not the economy is a carbon-based economy. That's just a fact of reality. We all are responsible. The governor chided our citizens in California that we're driving 39 million cars around. What are we powering those with? Granted, we're trying to bring on more alternates, but we have this significant challenge. So when you try to put blame on somebody, I don't think that becomes constructive. What it becomes is let's all figure out what we're doing, what we can do to address some of these concerns.
Bob Poole, again, is spokesperson with the Western States Petroleum Association. I want to hear Steve Jones' response to what you've just put forward.
Michael, you had brought up the Deepwater Horizon. Part of what the Trump administration is doing now that is so heinous is they are not only trying to drastically expand offshore drilling to levels never seen before, they're also rolling back drilling safety regulations approved after Deepwater Horizon. You know, rules intended to prevent another catastrophic oil spill that leaked over 200 million gallons into the Gulf of Mexico over a period of 3 months because the oil industry couldn't figure out how to plug this leak. Drilling is dirty, dangerous business. Offshore drilling is not something we need in this country. We have plenty of oil under contract, under reserve to get us through the transition to clean energy that we need to be making.
And you say what to that, if I may, Bob Poole, go back to you?
Well, two things. One of the reasons we need to understand, the reason that the Deepwater Horizon accident occurred was because we're being pushed further and further out into extreme environments to try to get resources that we could otherwise get onshore. Now, if I hear Mr. Jones correctly, what he's basically saying is he should be supporting onshore drilling of petroleum products while we make this transition, as he calls it. And I'm all for that. We're all for that.
But
at the same time, his organization is not for that. He may put that out there. The Center for Biological Diversity.
We are not for drilling in public lands and waters. That is absolutely true. But there is enough. There's plenty of private land where it's being pumped now, and there is enough under reserve to get us through this transition. We do not need to be letting the oil industry extract resources in a damaging way from our public lands and waters.
All right, I want to get to our public listeners. So this is public radio. I want to hear what they have to say. I'm looking at a comment, though, from Elizabeth who wants to know, did Florida get excluded from the new oil drilling because Trump has property interests there? Well, Florida is excluded. You can make your own conclusions about that. But President Trump actually said, I want Florida included in this. I believe he's on the record as saying
well,
that.
Well, and technically it is still included. It was less than a week after the plan came out, Ryan Zinke, the Interior Secretary, basically as a political favor to the Republican governor of Florida, who's going to be running for the Senate, took it out. And that's just counter to the due process and public processes that this administration seems to have a real disdain for. They don't like to go through the process of environmental review, because once we go through that, we're going to see just how damaging this plan is.
All right. We have a lot of calls. I want to get to as many of you as I can. Let me begin with a caller from Rochester, Minnesota. Heather, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'm just going to say thank you for taking my call, that I agree with Mr. Jones that we do not support drilling on any public lands or water. We're fighting here in Minnesota for a nickel mine that they want to put up on the boundary waters. And to Bob, how can we do anything when the EPA is being dismantled? I tried calling the EPA this morning, got rerouted to one lady. I mean, it's impossible to call the EPA to even have a complaint. And also, just one more thing, Bob, I think that oil companies should have to pay for the cleanup from also all the garbage that oil creates, plastic bottles, instead of you guys getting million-dollar houses and yachts, okay? Because it is everywhere. The garbage is everywhere, and oil creates that by your plastic that the Koch brothers produce and all these other oil companies produce, and you just fuel it into our economy and then expect someone to clean it up, and nobody does, and it's you who are creating it. You're creating it, and you're putting it into our oceans, and now you just want
to... All right, Heather, you've raised two questions for Bob Poole, so let me go to him. First of all, I don't believe Bob Poole is responsible for EPA, but in many people's judgment, it is being dismantled. It's very hard to get access to, so I don't know if you want to address that. But what about the cleanup specifically? I mean, I think she's right to bring that up, Bob Poole.
Well, that's an interesting comment. Again, I go back to what I originally said, that we are all responsible. We are not forcing people to use plastic bottles. We are simply producing the raw materials that are clear across our economy. So that we're all in this together, but to single out the oil industry is just ridiculous. On the second part of that question, we are cleaning up our messes, if you will. We have surety bonds. We are responsible. It's a regulatory control. Whenever there is an accident we go to work every day trying to create zero incidents and trying to produce the oil in the most stringent way under the most strict environmental controls there are, and we are doing it successfully. So to lay the blame and the bear of all of this on the companies that are producing the energy that's running our economy is just, it's just not fair. We're all in this together, and we all need to take responsibility for it. If you don't want to use plastic bottles, don't use plastic bottles.
Yeah, Steve Jones wants in here. Steve Jones.
Your industry is heavily subsidized by taxpayers to the tune of billions of dollars, and then even though we're giving you all these tax breaks on the front end, we're cleaning up your messes on the back end. California taxpayers are on the hook for $100 million to clean up after the offshore wells that Vinoco abandoned because it went bankrupt. This is what happens to these wells.
You know what, Steve? That's not true. There is currently the State Lands Commission. Steve, what you're alluding to is the State Lands Commission is estimating that platform Holly, the Venico platform, and then the Rincon Island, ultimately the abandonment could potentially be $100 million. There are surety bonds that are available from previous owners that are going to come into play, and they're still sorting all of this out. So to lay
Excellent.
That on, and I don't know what you're talking about subsidies. The oil industry makes on average about the same as all the industries combined on return on investment. It's an average 6-7%. And we are required to go in and abandon, et cetera, to have surety bonds. We just worked with the state of California on a huge program to go out and help fund additional cleanup of idle and orphan wells as they become non-productive. There's a very proactive, ongoing, collaborative effort for us to produce the energy and to be a critical player in making sure that we minimize the environmental impact.
All right, Bob, let me jump in here because I want to get to more of our callers, and they're waiting patiently to talk with us. James is joining us next. James, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Thank you for taking my call. My argument is that these are bad investments, especially in the long term. Your guest keeps talking about how we're all in this together, but all that these things provide is short-term profits for a very small group of people. And my generation, my kids' generation, my grandkids' generation are the ones stuck with the bill. We need to have diminishing returns. Whatever oil you take out, the remaining oil increases in cost. Whereas if we were taking that money and investing it in renewable sources and we were increasing power storage and power generation on that front, that price goes down. So it's a better investment in the future, and it's a better investment in the long run. If he was actually interested in all of us being in this together, then that's the direction that we would be going.
All right, let me thank you for your call. We'll let it stand, James, as an editorial comment. I want to get to many calls as I can. Let me go next to Patrick. Patrick, join us. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to point out, look, the U.S. is on track to be a net exporter of oil. This oil that we're producing, whether it's offshore or in wells next to where kids are playing in Los Angeles or elsewhere in the U.S., this doesn't necessarily stay in California or anywhere else. It can go all over the world. That's why the oil industry lobbied for lifting the crude export ban and got that lifted. That's why the oil industry has fought all these efforts to rein in oil use and to make cars more efficient and so on. So this argument that we need this oil, the oil industry itself is working so hard to prevent the transition to cleaner sources of energy, and it affects our ocean. It also affects kids in Kern County and Los Angeles and other places where these oil wells are spewing out air pollution and carbon dioxide that's affecting our climate. So it's really disingenuous of the oil industry representative to talk about how he is working with people in California to get to that transition. They're fighting that transition every step of the way. And our oceans and kids living next to these oil wells, they are the collateral damage.
Let me get a response from Bob Poole. Bob Poole.
Yeah, well, a couple of points there. It's just simply not true. The air quality that's been improved in Kern County, 90-some percent of it has been brought about by the petroleum industry. The vast majority of pollution in Kern County, et cetera, it comes from transport of trucks hauling our goods and services out of the Long Beach, L.A. Harbors. Now, relative to the amount of oil in California and exporting it, California uses and refines every drop of oil that we produce here. And we only produce about 38%, on average 500,000 to 600,000 barrels a day. It is all used here. The other million plus barrels that we import every day is used here. California is not exporting any oil. The rest of the United States, there are different opportunities. California is in a net deficit of over 60% of the oil it needs. So it is not exporting any oil. The only thing it's exporting is the gasoline to Oregon because they have no refineries. And so we import some refined gasoline to offset the gasoline we export to Oregon.
Let me read a couple of tweets here because they're important to the discussion. Tim tweets, the real discussion isn't about using oil or not using oil. It is where the oil will come from. Right now, California is importing 55% of its oil from foreign sources. Supporters of producing in California believe we should invest in our workers and jobs, not foreign oil. And David tweets, a 2015 Ocean Economics Report states that ocean tourism and recreation provide 12 times the amount of jobs to the United States economy than offshore oil production. And another comment from a listener says, if we have not reached the point of no return to save the planet, we need to put an immediate halt to the use of fossil fuels and replace it with renewable energy. And here's a caller from Sonoma. Don, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I'm a geologist. I've worked in the game for a long time, taught it for a long time. All I can say is that the problem is, to the north of Point Arena, you've got a subduction zone system feeding the volcanism of the High Cascades. The south of it, you've got the largest transformed boundary that we know in the municipal area on the planet Earth. The technology to drill the north coast of California does not exist. You can't use North Sea. You darn sure can't use Gulf Coast technology. And until that exists, and it's never going to exist in our lifetime, leave it alone or you're going to have a bigger problem than Deepwater Horizon ever imagined. It's just insanity.
All right, we'll let that comment stand. And let me thank you for the call and get another caller on here. I believe we have a young 13-year-old joining us. Seth, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm Seth. I'm 13 years old, like you said, but we're on our way to the Sacramento protest, and
right,
we're going there because we need to focus on more of a long-term project instead of a short-term fix for offshore oil drilling, and that we need clean water for future generations to come.
All right. Thank you, Seth, and good luck with your protest up in Sacramento. I'm going to read a comment here from a listener named Aaron who says, we quite simply are not prepared to handle large-scale oil spills. This was proven when we couldn't handle the oil spill in the Gulf. This is nothing but Trump rewarding his wealthy oil company donors under the guise of energy independence. Let me bring another caller aboard here. We go, Christian, to you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, I think your guest on the show is kind of operating on a false premise that U.S. somehow has the strictest environmental control laws in the world. It's totally clear that Europe has much stricter and efficient environmental control laws. And not to mention, like another one of the callers said, that the industry spends billions every year on lobbyists to try to fight this every step of the way. And, yeah, just trying to pretend that investing billions in lobbyists to fight the transition and investing billions in new archaic infrastructure to try to promote oil, you know, for as long as they possibly can is just not where anyone's money needs to go, and it should be stopped.
Well, it's clear where many of our callers are and where their sentiments are. But let me go back to you, Steve Jones, because there was a Bob Poole made a point earlier on that I wanted to get your response to. That is, we have become utterly dependent on fossil fuels. Just look at the highways. Look at the cars that are out of control. And as we become more and more dependent on the automobile, or have become more dependent on the automobile, so the argument goes, what are we going to do to substitute for fossil fuels?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a lot to be done with conservation, with other forms of energy. And, you know, this oil that we're drilling now is not just for our domestic needs. The oil industry pushed for and got an end of the oil export ban. This is about oil companies making money and delaying our transition to clean energy sources. Yeah, I mean, in the near future, We certainly need some oil that we've already identified and is already under contract. We don't need to be creating decades-long leases that are going to extend this oil addiction out 50 years. That's just madness.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you, Steve Jones. He's a spokesperson for the Center for Biological Diversity. And thank you, Bob Poole, who is a spokesperson with Western States Petroleum Association. And thank you, our listeners. By the way, the public comment period is currently open for the expansion proposal. We have a link up on our website with details on how to add your comment. It's on our website at kqed.org/forum. And another hour of Forum is up ahead. But first, let me tell you who's behind the scenes here. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Susan Britton, and Katie Springer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Engineered are Katie McMurrin and Danny Bringer. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Lisa Arbitman and Amy Wolner. Our managing editor is Ethan Lindsay, and our executive producer is Holly Kernan. Thank you for being a part of this morning's program, and for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.